This is Doctoring Up Design, a lively, interactive, and educational series presented by Design Hardware and held in their showroom on 3rd Street in Los Angeles. Doctoring Up Design was created to address your pain points in the constantly changing world of design and architecture. Doctoring Up Design features the most knowledgeable and creative designers, architects, manufacturers, and product designers in the business today to help you build a healthy and strong design practice. Today on the show, you are going to hear the story about Nathan Anthony and how this luxury furnishings company came to be the distinct brand it is today. You will hear the story direct from Tina Nicole, lead designer and co-founder. This is a story of design, yes, but personal growth and a desire to leave an indelible mark on an industry, on her artful endeavor, her passion, that is interior design. This is Nathan Anthony's Tina Nicole.
Tell me the origin of the company. I like to start at the beginning, and I've learned that if I ask about the origin story, I always get the truth. I always get the real deal, like why the company was started and where the name comes from.
Yes.
And just, you know, I think that says a lot about how a company is, you know, a company comes to be.
Yeah, thank you for asking. Well, it's an interesting. I wrote about it in my book, actually, Dream Design Disrupt. I wrote about it, and it's kind of an interesting story. So, the origin of the company is back in 2003, and I graduated from law school, and I graduated law school. My husband had a mattress manufacturer. He was making mattresses with his father, so I married a maker. Yay me! And so he asked me to come on board because I had gone through this tragedy of a life tragedy where we lost a pregnancy sort of far along. So it was enough of a loss. I mean, like, and I was really depressed. I just graduated law school. I was studying for the bar. And he's like, why don't you come pick some textiles for me? I want to launch this, you know, I want to change up our sofa line. And he was just making sofas for local companies. And I said, okay. So I came in and I spread all these fabrics around and I ordered new fabrics from like Waverly at the time and these kinds of companies and put them on some of the just basic sofas. And we did a few trade shows and here we had a business. It just kind of took off on its own. And then we had to change. So then we had this business. So we had to change the name because we didn't want it to be like the mattress company that was kind of making some sofas. We thought, this is really the direction because the mattress industry was suffering this influx of Chinese products coming in from China, the mattresses. And so the pricing was just hard to compete for his company. So that's kind of, you know, there were all these factors sort of in play. So we changed the name of the company to our son, Nathan Anthony. He was like 1.5 or something. And we feel like it's kind of a gift from the babies that we lost. So it's got this beautiful origin to it. And from there, it just blossomed and it's been what we do. So I hope that's not too personal.
No, I love it. What I'm thinking is it's so interesting because as many conversations as I've had with creators, the origin stories are really the thing that I find true inspiration from. They excite me. I get inspired by them. I think it's the coolest thing when there are stories, you know. And listen, don't get me wrong, sometimes it's like, well, my dad knew that I wanted to do this, so he gave me the money to start and we just started selling products. Like, oh, that's a great story. Not that that's not a great story, because if you've got a company that you got money from dad for startup, it's awesome,
right?
But I love the origin stories because I think it's really cool, and I think it also says a lot about companies. And I told you a story when we first met before I hit the little red button. When the pandemic started, before there was that period of time when the CDC was like, yeah, don't wear masks because it's not going to help you. So mm-hmm. Nobody was wearing masks. Not that we were really going anywhere except to the store and home, but still, the first mask I got was a Nathan Anthony mask.
That's
and
awesome.
it was made of, and I'm going to try to find the picture, and if I can I'll edit it in to the video, but it was your upholstery material.
Yeah, we had leftover materials, you know, we had COMs, we have our own materials, and we had the elastic So Kai and I designed these masks. I remember doing the sketches, and we just designed something based on what's already out there, and we used our materials. But what's great is we had to shut down because we weren't essential. But we brought in a few of our seamsters and seamstresses to sew and run the cut and sew, so that we could make a few to give out to friends. We donated them to food banks, to COVID clinics, because clinics were opening up. Remember, the hospitals were all overflowing. They had too many patients, right?
Yeah.
So we donated them to the clinics that were opening, and it really felt good. It felt, you know, it felt right to do something we could.
It probably felt like you were doing something at a time when you can't do anything.
Yes, you couldn't do anything. That's so true.
So tell me about, here's what I find so, tell me about a law student who wants to design, or who has been brought in to design furniture.
Well, out of high school, I actually went to FITM and studied
textiles. Oh, you did?
Yeah, I went to Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising in LA, and I studied textiles and entrepreneurship and design and floor planning, window styling, things like that. And I was also working as a window stylist for the Italian company Benetton and Express and Ralph Lauren and things like that. So that's where I got that sort of knowledge and information, I guess, if you will, into that creative. But that's really where my love always was. And then I realized, because it was only a 2-year program, that I kind of grew bored with that, and I wanted to get a bachelor's degree. So then I went to UCLA and got an English literature degree, because my father was an attorney and he was a poet, and so I was very influenced by letters and poetry and authors and this world. So I did that, and then from there I went to law school. And I was pregnant while I took the bar and passed. Yay! Thank God!
The furniture designing lawyer daughter of a lawyer poet.
Exactly.
Okay. I see a pattern here. Where'd you grow up?
At Glendale. Oh. Near Pasadena. Yeah, here.
You're an Angeleno too?
Yes.
Native Angeleno?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, second generation.
So am I. And it's funny because I just had this total like flashback when you said Benetton.
Yes, thinking, you remember?
I grew up in the 80s in the San Fernando Valley as a teenager.
Yeah, and it was hot.
And the colors of Benetton, and I remember those commercials, and I remember the windows, and I remember the merchandising.
Yeah, I did
of
the windows.
That,
it's one some of them.
It's one of the things that sticks out for me from my childhood. It's the coolest thing.
They had the best windows.
Yes.
And they were always multiracial, like hands of, it was so revolutionary at the
fully
time.
Fully inclusive.
Yes, it was so beautiful.
So, when you look back at your first collection, what do you think?
Yeah, it wasn't the standout. It wasn't memorable.
I ask that because the furniture now, the product you make now, is so unique.
Thank you.
And it's so creative.
Thank you.
And it has to start somewhere. When did you feel like you're on to something, like you know what you're doing?
Do you ever really feel that way?
Well, it's funny. I was just speaking to an architect with a major LA firm. Yeah. And I said to him, you know, he's been a principal with the firm now for close to 30 years. And I asked, and he answered, it's like now he felt like he had the license to be experimental. And when you start off in the business
and you're
creating furniture, you don't. You have to create what's going to sell.
Yes, that's exactly.
Then after you get what's going to sell, then you can be experimental, because now people want to buy what you're making, not what you're making based on what somebody else sold.
100%. That's exactly our journey as well. We were just making things that sold, track arms, basic things, but changing the covers so it had style and flair so you noticed it. But then we started traveling to Europe together. I mean, I traveled through Europe when I was younger, but not with my husband as a designer. So then we started, once we got money in the coffer for our business, because we didn't make money for about the first 5 years. There was a real struggle to make payroll, those kinds of things. Finally, we started making money and we started exploring and feeling, like you said, just more confident, just like, you know, I think I got this, you know, from doing, right? So that's really how it happened. We started traveling, and I think, you know, from friends I've spoken with, when the way I look at the world is I see details, I see things, whereas I might miss the whole forest, but I might miss the trees, but I'll, I mean, I might miss the forest, but I'll see the trees. I think that's the analogy or the metaphor. But I see, you know, I might see inspiration for a leg in a bridge in Singapore, or I love walking through the side streets of Venice, Italy, and I'll go in, I'll pop into the bread maker shop, and I'll pop into the wood carving shop, the glass blowing shops. You pop into these places in Croatia, wherever you are, and you just get so much inspiration from people that are actually doing these time-tested, time-honored techniques from their grandparents and their parents. And those are where I've really learned the techniques that we use in our upholstery is where it's really noticed, and some of the shapes that we create. It's definitely from influencing from when we started to travel. That's when we changed. And then we got confident just saying, we're going to try this. Like, let's be fearless. I mean, it's my company. I have nothing to lose except for can't pay the bills.
Except for reputation.
Right, and everything like that.
Whatever.
Yeah, so you kind of got to be, you know, a risk taker for sure.
Well, and it puts you in position to handle changes. Yeah. So changes in the business. Holy cow! Did you ever imagine 5 years ago that the business was going to change so dramatically on every level?
No, I mean, even I know in another podcast I was listening to someone talking about starting a furniture company in 2008, 2009. One of your other podcasts. It was so inspirational during that recession. And Kai and I just started in 2005, and so we were gaining momentum, and then we saw things were dipping. But we always positioned ourselves to be the value-driven in the high-end market, and that was a good position for us because we're in 100% in control, and we're there every day. So, you know, we can do things, we can pivot, we can do things that maybe other companies that are more corporate structured with that corporate structure, or they're more tethered to the way things have to be and rules. So answering your question is when this pandemic happened and these things, we had to shut our business. It was devastating to say goodbye to our employees. I mean, I had tears in my eyes, 50 people, like one day they're there, one day they're not there. Where are they going to go? What are they ever going to come back? I mean, it was scary. Luckily we had loyalty and we were excited to bring them back. I hope that answers your question, but yeah, we had to pivot, you know.
Where do you manufacture?
Los Angeles.
Everything?
Yeah, everything.
Where do your raw materials come from?
They come from mostly U.S., but they may import from, bring it into the U.S. and then import it. But
because part of that pivot
was materials.
Well, how do we get our raw materials in? Yeah. The upholstery, that's one thing, but then it's the foam. And then it's the lumber.
I mean,
it's hard.
Yeah, so my husband who practices, he implemented lean manufacturing. And what that means for us was having really good relationships with your suppliers. And we're small enough, but we do enough volume to be important to our suppliers. So we were always on the A-list of who they're, when they get materials, who are they going to give it to? Okay, let's be honest, right?
Who do we like working with
right.
most?
Who pays
their
bills?
The fastest?
So my husband, we have a meeting with our team. We have such a great internal team. And we, you know, we're like, pay on time, pay before. Make sure that we're organized. Because lean manufacturing means we deliver our orders in a very organized fashion. So our suppliers can say, okay, Nathan Anthony is easy to work with. I know how to complete this order. It's just like with designers. We work with architects. They give you line by line details. They know what they're doing. Designers just starting out, they may not know as easily. I mean, we still provide the same level of service, of course, but it's easier for our team to work with people who know how to order, who are organized and who can't be organized. So
in what, 23 years of business?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever consider Vietnam, Mexico,
oh, of course.
Philippines?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we even visited Vietnam. We visited other countries, Hong Kong. I mean, Hong Kong, not manufacturing in Hong Kong, but we've gone to those. You know, we have to be informed, right? We have to meet a bottom line. We have to meet a number. But we just realized that we really made the decision to keep it here, not go to Mexico. Mexico is probably the easiest option. Yeah. I mean, it's the closest.
Yeah.
But Kai and I really want to be committed to our employees and our sourcing, which is making it here. We really love Los Angeles. We love making the product here. We have full control here. It would change a lot of our brand DNA, if you will, if we made it in Vietnam.
Because you're an LA-based company, yeah. LA-manufactured company, do you think that hindered the growth on the East Coast?
You know, that's crazy you ask, because the East Coast is our number one customers are on the East Coast.
Really?
Yeah, it's our number one.
Why do you think that is?
Maybe two factors. They're very much, they have the really high style client, Hamptons, you know, up and out in Manhattan. They have high style clients. They love a California look. Mm. It's California, but with European influence, I think. I mean, it's hard for me because I see it every day, but they're just a stylish group, a stylish buyer. And California, maybe they see California design more. So, but New Jersey, New York, Florida, it's a big market for us. So no, it's not a hindrance.
And then West Coast, of course.
West Coast, all the major metropolitan areas are really the customer for us. And we're still learning about our customer, because we're also always evolving and changing, because just because we can, and I'm a very curious person. So
what about the Midwest?
The Midwest,
and South.
South loves us, but it's really the West Coast and the East Coast.
Yeah.
The North and the South, not as much. The middle of the country, yes, there are pockets, but it's really the outer edges of the U.S. that really get this look. I mean, it's not for everybody, and the wait times are not for everybody, and the price range is not for everybody. So, But we've been busy, and we're very thankful for that business.
Tell me about availability now. I would imagine, too, that because you're a domestic company, that, you may have some issues getting certain materials.
Yeah.
But by and large, you're probably delivering faster.
We actually are not delivering faster, because it's kind of like a wheel in a cog. When you stop, all that water builds up, right? And then when you open up again, it has to still funnel through. It has to funnel through that canal, right? So that's kind of what happened with us. When we opened back up, everybody wanted to order again. And luckily, our product is in demand. Our designs are in demand. So it's kind of like, but we only have so many hands, and it really is a handmade product. Sorry. I've been doing so much on computer, but... Yeah, so there's just so much. The hands can only make so much, and I love it, because people really find value still in these handmade products.
Tell me about the design process for the company.
So we have two shows a year. We do High Point Market, North Carolina shows. So our process is every 6 months we bring new product to market. Now with the pandemic and our lead times being longer, it's, you know, we can't just like launch a whole new collection, because, well, why aren't you making the products that people have ordered? So we've definitely scaled that down, but we find, I found time to maybe add on to a collection that we have that people are really asking for. So the process is really, it's maybe three parts. I'm always looking at what trends are out there, I look at what people are ordering or what they're asking for. So I pay attention to what designers are doing out there, in terms of the fabrics they're sending me, the shapes they're requesting. So I've really got my ears and eyes open to what they're doing. And then I also do a little bit about what I'm interested in, and what I think people might raise an eyebrow a little bit, and what I'm really excited about.
You do all the design yourself?
Well, with my husband. I mean, I think I'm the creative visionary, really, for the company.
Yeah.
It sounds weird saying that, but that's when put on my artistic hat.
Why does it sound weird
well,
saying that?
You know, I don't know. It's just, I'm maybe just being the person that has to shout that out sounds odd to me, but it's the creative vision. So I'll go to my husband, he'll say, I can't make that, and I'll say, yes, we can make that. We have to figure out a way to make that. And then he'll go back and we'll have a little friction, and then he'll say, okay, maybe I can do that. You know, so we challenge each other.
What does that look like? What does a little, right. What does a little friction look like?
Right. I mean, it is interesting working with your husband, but first of all, we're best friends, yeah. And we're sort of each other's cheerleader, if you will. So we always sort of try to operate from that space. So the friction is, it's good. I mean, it's good to have a conversation about design like we're having now, because you really elevate each other and you think that you come up with ideas that you can't do when you're singularly designing.
Yeah. Where does your inspiration come from?
It comes from a lot of places. It may come from a magazine that I looked at 3 years ago. It may come from travels that I've done along the way, I've experienced along the way. It may come from an art gallery that I just visited, or an opera I went to, music videos I watch, the Fenty show. Like I love all of that. You know, I'm just an observant person. So where does it come from? I don't really know. But it's just, I like to, I don't know, I reach deep down in, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's just something that comes from a feeling that you have. It's something that makes you move. When you see beauty, it makes, you know, it causes a stir in your soul and in your gut. And that's really when I know that, oh, I may want to do something like in that realm.
Has the design changed over the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, it's really evolved.
Has it?
Definitely has. I was more into geometric, hard-edged designs, and then I transitioned into softer forms. I mean, our look has always been sort of feminine modern because of the European influence, but it's really gone much more rounded, if you will, which I love. And that's where I think it's really taken a turn.
Why do you think?
I think it's probably from the pandemic. A lot of it is wanting to nestle in, wanting to feel comfortable at home. Also having a son who runs around my house, and you don't want hard edges, and we have a huge family, so we have like 30 nieces and nephews who are all fantastic, and family nights every Wednesday night with my husband's extended family. So, you know, it's just a softer shape, I think, also from just wanting to be home and working from home. I had to work from home. And
well, and listen, the reason I ask that is because I feel like because someone like you has been forced to work from home.
Yeah.
You've probably learned a thing or two.
Yeah.
About being at home, and if you and I are at all alike, which I think we probably are in this regard, you have some empathy for what others who are at home do. Unlike me, you have the ability to actually craft product that will comfort them in their home, and I would imagine that would have to change your design style.
It really did. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, absolutely. So a lot of the design that we make is from living with it. Even the beds, when Kai used to make the mattresses, we would use them in our homes. But yeah, the furniture really does come from what would I like to see in my home? Definitely it's the function of the piece, the function of, you know, you don't want hard edges, you need them to be softer because you have little kids playing around them. So, and yeah, what makes you comfortable in your own home is something that's an extension of what people are going to buy or what they're going to like. I mean, it also goes with marketing the piece as well, because it doesn't always hit. You know, you have to also tell the story behind it, things like that. But yeah, you're right, 100%.
What's next?
Next. This last time I had the great opportunity to work with artists, an established artist in Los Angeles.
Artists or designers?
Artists.
Artists, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So I emphasized that at this last High Point Market. So Sahara Novotna is this well-established artist in Los Angeles. She's an international artist. But I loved working with her because I started using different materials with upholstered furniture, which I'm sure isn't revolutionary, but it is unique in our category. And I think that it really touched a soft spot, a happy spot in our industry. So we started working with something that she works with, which is epoxy resin and different types of materials. And we brought it to market, and people loved her. They loved what we made together. And it's because I believe she's not an interior designer. So it's not like a designer who also dabbles in art.
Yeah.
This is a real artist. And so she just has this unique vision and unique talents to bring something special. So that's what I want to do more of, work with artists.
Is there anyone in mind, or any other, maybe it's not any person in mind per se, but perhaps an avenue, a product that they work with, or a medium in which they work?
Yeah, a medium. I'd love to work with kind of crazy materials, like more, I'd love to work with tar. I love drippy things. More resin, because resin's so, from my conversations with Sahara, these are some of the materials that we love, that we can really envision. Maybe tableware, maybe diningware, maybe accents for our upholstered beds and our upholstered chairs, things like that. I'd love to work with, I don't know, nails, metal, titanium, like it could be anything. I'm exploring those avenues, even digital realm things, like cryptocurrency, things like that I'm very into. So call me crazy, but I'd love to.
No, adventurous.
Explore.
I love that. Look, this goes back to, you know, what we've come full circle. This goes back to the conversation where I asked a previous guest, and we talked about this too. Have you been doing this long enough to earn a license to experiment?
Very good question. I think, you know, yeah, you're talking like street cred, right? You're talking
Look, so people know Nathan Anthony. They know that there's a level of quality there.
Yeah.
They know that what you get is an enduring brand. It's a product that's going to stand the test of time. Yes, it looks gorgeous and it's wonderful, but it's also going to withstand the toddler jumping on it, and it's going to withstand life. And then you can come out and experiment with things where people will know, because sometimes when you experiment with new materials or new products or new designers or new influences, people will think, well, I'm going to wait a while and see how they do. But if you've been around a while and you've got a reputation, people know you for the reputation that you have, as they do, they are willing to say, you know what, I'm going to buy it out of the gate because I know the reputation.
Yeah, I mean, within our, again, our brand DNA is the piece has to be just as beautiful inside as it is outside.
Yeah.
Beautiful meaning also constructed, not only beautifully, but to stand the test of time. So these are really heirloom pieces. When we do factory tours, we always show that the inside of the piece, because the way that it's designed for the artisans to get in there and pull fabric, because working with upholstery is very hard, and foam. It's a whole different level. You have to really have expertise to get those seams right, to know fabric. And granted, we take COMs in. We take silk. We take muslin. Well, not muslin, but yeah, fancy muslin. We take boucle. We take leather. We have to know how to work with all of that.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that, because I have my own experience. So I know what you're saying is true. When the pandemic started, you know, it's interesting because after doing this show for 9 years, prior to 3 years ago, I would say maybe one interview I did was on the phone. Maybe one.
Wow.
Since then, obviously, way more were done via Zoom. But what that meant was that I had to do more. I started probably 5 years ago at the LA Design Festival. I did a setup there. I did a pop-up, and I sewed my own panels.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
For noise of
yeah,
abandon.
Yeah.
Not because I wanted to create a product or be a designer, but because I knew that it was going to be really super noisy.
Yes.
And I had to do something. So
foam panels.
And it was really hard. And then when the pandemic hit, I had to recraft different ones for home. to try to figure it out. I could have bought stuff, but yeah. I didn't want to buy anything else. We were already buying all kinds of stuff, and yeah. I didn't want things shipped in, and I just didn't want to. You know, I wanted to kind of use what I had and repurpose it and see if I could figure something out. And we used old T-shirts and repurposed the foam. And so I tell you that because so I totally get how challenging it can be mm-hmm. to work with that. But I would also imagine for you, that's part of where the magic and fun lie.
Yeah, we're known as the couturiers of the industry. It's like a Savile Row, if you will, when you go to a tailor shop. And that comes from my grandmother teaching me sewing techniques when I was little, and Kai learning to sew by next to his mom when all of his sisters were sewing when they came over from Vietnam. So sewing and crafting is that hand work. We do it with machines, but some of it we have to close with hands. And we obviously teach the artisans that we hire how to do our sewing our way and upholstering the way that we want them to. So it's really craft. It's craft. It's Los Angeles crafting. It's beautiful, and we're passionate about it. We're there every day. We love it.
I love that. Thank you.
Thank you.
This was great.
Thank you for having me.
This has been another episode of Doctoring Up Design, a podcast presented by Design Hardware. Thank you, Tina, for your time. Thank you, Michelle Solomons and Avi Balsam with Design Hardware, for making this platform available and for your tireless support of the design and architecture community. Thank you for listening and subscribing to Doctoring Up Design. Please make sure you are subscribing to the show so you don't miss a single episode. You can find all the links in the show notes. Thanks for listening.